Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello out there, and welcome to New Cyber Frontier. This is Abe Thompson. I'm the campus director here at SecureSet Academy, where we're broadcasting or podcasting in place of our regular host, Chris Gorog. I have the privilege of sitting in for our esteemed colleague there on the world's most popular cyber podcast. We have the extra special treat today being the presence of Colonel Ed Rios, Mr. Ed Rios, a friend and colleague here in the Colorado Springs area. He's also lead at CSOC, which is Cyberspace Operations, his company there. He also has the distinction of having been the former CEO of the National Cybersecurity Center here in Colorado Springs. Ed, it is a delight to see you. How are you doing?
Pleasure to be here, Abe. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, indeed. So tell me about how things are going at CSOC.
Things are going fantastic. We just had another banner year. We just got our new company president in. We changed out our presidents here on the first. Jim Wolf retired and moved to South Carolina and his little house in the Turks and Caicos. And Jim Maestas, another retired Air Force colonel, an electrical engineer engineering background. Big cyber guy, big space guy. He's taken the place here as president. Last year, we continued to grow in our various locations, Hawaii, San Antonio, and here, and a little bit in Washington, D.C., so great year for CSOC.
Fantastic. Are you sure you want to rely on all that Air Force expertise? You don't want to branch out?
We mix it up pretty good. The company's about 50% government, 50% private sector.
Excellent.
And in that government area, we mix it up pretty well among all the services and guys who served in the cyber and space communities principally, which is where our focus is.
Well, I know it's a rare person out there that doesn't know who you are, Ed, and of course we know you well here. Can you talk to me a little bit about your time in the DoD, time in the Air Force, and lead up to today?
Yeah, it was kind of a strange and eclectic career. I spent a good portion of it not even in uniform, but I started as a missile officer in Minot, North Dakota. I was convinced that was the best place to go at the time. Yeah, it was very cold there. But that was a fairly consistently easy job. Left there and became cadre into what was then a nuclear deterrent called the Ground-Launched Cruise Missile, mm-hmm. a nuclear Tomahawk program. In that area, there was a huge special operations participation. We worked a lot with the 7th Special Forces Group. And so I started to move that direction very quickly. Eventually got recruited into some unacknowledged programs, and in fact ended up on a ship, and that's my affiliation with the Navy. I spent 2 years at sea on a program called Cobra Duty, mm-hmm. And then off to the Pentagon, and by that time, you're a lieutenant colonel, you're getting old, they don't let you do fun things anymore, you gotta go to headquarters and schools. I ended up in cyber along the way, largely because in those days we called it by different names, but it was the way to support as an operator the intelligence community.
Sure.
And space was getting big into that. So I got recruited into the space operations, and that's how I ended up in Colorado Springs.
Well, and in fact, as you were telling me earlier, the S in your organization's acronym is SPACE.
Correct.
And obviously the way of the future here, there's some really good data on the Colorado Springs-Denver corridor when it comes to space. Can you comment on what you know of some of the strengths of this area?
Sure, and as NCC CEO, I was trying to replicate that in the cyber community. Years ago, we had a four-star commander here, once the Air Force Space Command broke off on its own, and I had just retired from the service, and I had a discussion with him, and I mentioned, hey, everything space is cyber-based.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, no, it's not. And then he thought about it for a second, and he said, you might have a point there. And now, not only is it cyberspace, whether it's TCP/IP within a satellite or the communications between the ground and the SpaceX rocket, but certainly we're starting to put a large part of what will the future be in orbit. And it's small sats, various companies including Spinosaurus and SpaceX, will be putting satellites up there to provide internet service. As we looked at the space corridor and the synergies between here and Denver and the two coasts, it's clear that this is really commercializing in the space area.
Sure.
We've worked in CSOC, we've worked with the Brits, even in Denver, as they have expanded there with other countries as well. And of course, with the private sector as they're coming up in the Denver area, it's Sierra Nevada Corporation. We have folks that have come and gone from there, and we've helped them. We've worked with Blue Origin. We have someone there. We currently support SpaceX, which is not here, sure. But ULA is, and we've worked with and for ULA before, and of course, the parent organizations individually.
So much more to talk about, and let's take a break real quick to hear from our sponsors.
Sure.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. I'm your guest host, Abe Thompson, podcasting here from SecureSet with our special guest, Mr. Ed Rios. Ed, we kind of heard quite a bit about your very eclectic path, as you mentioned, through the DoD all the way now into the environment that you're in with space. And you made a very clear insistence that everything space is cyber. Unpack that a little bit more.
Sure. A lot of the communications that are coming and going are RF communications, right? That's just the nature of the game. But in order to move those pieces of data and those data rates quickly, whether it's for government and military purposes, pushing predator feed data, video data, back to the folks that need it through distribution systems like DCGS, or working new small satellite programs, either for research and development, or in the case of Iridium, or in the case of SpaceX or other companies, in terms of processing and bringing another conduit for internet services. Interesting fact here, I didn't realize this until a few years ago, about 95% of the Earth's internet traffic travels undersea, through undersea cabling. And the web of that is huge. And quite frankly, in some ways, it's quite vulnerable, certainly physically, but potentially from a cybersecurity standpoint as well. Let's just say that a portion of that goes away, or worst case, all of it goes away.
Right.
We don't have the capacity to continue to move internet traffic, email, financial transactions, whatever it is, without some other means. And that other means in the future, I think, is going to be space-based.
Fabulous. Well, but for what you're saying right now to this Navy guys, that the sea is really important for internet traffic.
I appreciate hearing that.
And so what does the solution look like then for that redundancy in space? Who's doing well in that right now?
I think it's a fledgling opportunity. It's certainly going to be, I believe, the future of how we move traffic. There's two common denominators in cyber, and one of them is electricity. The other one is a telecommunications grid. Now, that telecommunications grid, I think, historically has been terrestrially based.
Yeah.
It's going to be space-based, and that's, I think, what the future offers for us.
Sure, sure. And certainly plenty of experience with that in my DoD background as well. In your transition from DoD, specifically unique DoD, into the corporate sector, have you seen success in translating the urgency to our private sector friends?
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge, especially as a small business guy.
Yeah.
When I left the service, I entered into the high altitude, long endurance drone programs, and mm-hmm. I have patents in that area.
Sure.
And those patents were principally focused on payloads, providing services from high altitude, long endurance platforms. I did it as a small business, worked with other companies that were small businesses, But our challenge really was the large guys, right? Mm-hmm. And the huge contracts that those support. Those are hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollar contracts. They don't want those to go away, and neither do their shareholders. So if you and I come as innovators with this great new technology and capability that could provide equal or better service for a whole lot less money, you run up against a brick wall trying to Sure. make that happen, both from the customer set standpoint as well as those large corporations which want to hold you down. Now, the good news is maybe they'll buy you and they'll find a way to make that technology work for you and for them, but that's not always the case.
And with the risk of you losing your identity and your Sure. individuality, and as we know, your agility.
Absolutely.
As a small business. And I do agree there's such excitement in having a larger community of smaller innovators. You know, that's nothing to say bad about our, you know, the bigs, but we know agility is where it's at. I experienced that on a regular basis as, you know, an educator in the cybersecurity space. You know, we're not a big brick and mortar, so we have a lot more freedom to stay agile and update and remain current because there's not some of the bureaucratic overhead, at least.
Yeah, absolutely right.
That you would experience. And so with the big folks, though, how have they succeeded? You talked about maybe buying some of these smaller businesses.
Well, they succeeded in a couple of different ways. One is through merger and acquisition, right, M&A.
Right.
And others that have been very innovative in how they do things, like SpaceX.
Sure.
SpaceX is one of our clients. They're a phenomenal company. Mm-hmm. We've helped them grow into the Air Force and in the government business sectors. But it takes a lot of innovation, not only in terms of technology, but in terms of how you apply management, program management, and ideas and move those ideas and make it real so that you end up moving from a fledgling innovation to a large corporation that's very well respected now.
Sure, and with good program management in this realm comes good security practices, and you have to have that demonstrable to the clients if they're going to buy into you.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the innovative things that most large corporations would not hear of, and a lot of others wouldn't, is it's not unusual for large companies, and I won't say which necessarily, but every year they'll fire the bottom 10% of their employees.
Sure.
To turn them over, right?
Yeah,
and that's how you keep the innovation going, new ideas coming. You don't let it stagnate. You get a lot of these other, that you know, brick and mortar huge corporations.
Yeah,
it is what it is, and they
Can't
stay there
it.
Forever.
Yeah, it's up or out.
It
right?
is up or out, and then on the other side of that coin, which kind of exacerbates, I think, the problem, is the contracting and acquisition government service workforce. Now, I've got nothing against government service employees. My wife is one.
Sure.
But as long as we have a legion, an army, if you will, of civil servants that are part of a process that is an old, FAR-related, federal acquisition-related process, innovation can't be embraced well.
Sure.
It's certainly
sure.
not very expedient.
Yeah, and there's the comfort of being in a position for a while and those things, and sort of external challenges are sometimes perceived as a threat.
Sure.
Innovation's perceived as a threat because it's a change in the way we're doing things.
Can you imagine if we went to the civil servants of the world and said, okay, the bottom 10% of you guys are gone, and we're going to do that every year?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It might be a good shakeup, but, you know, again, we love our civil servants. So what challenge or concern really fires you up right now, especially having come off your time with NCC and even now as a small businessman? What's the challenge?
I think what bothers me more are very controversial cyber issues, cybersecurity issues, particularly in the commercial aviation community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the very advanced aircraft are heavily dependent on IP points, right? And many of those aircraft fly internationally to places that aren't necessarily friendly to the United States.
Sure.
When these systems were designed, when these aircraft were designed and the systems within them, we didn't have the kind of threats we have today.
Correct.
So that's one concern. And the ability to shake that up is difficult, right? So you have a parent organization that builds the aircraft, whether it's overseas or a U.S. company, and they're kind of concerned that they don't want to scare their customers, and certainly don't want to scare their passengers, and they want to take care of their shareholders. So that's really potentially damaging news that might be really exaggerated a bit, embellished a bit, because we don't have the data yet.
Right.
Right. Right. So that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is the folks who really have the responsibility of transitioning that threat to the United States is the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about them, and by the way, they own a 757. It's fully functional, flyable at 757 to explore these capabilities.
Sure.
One of the challenges they've got is they don't have the authority for safety of flight. That rests with the FAA. Right? So you have this constant friction. And oh, by the way, none of this involves the military. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but civilian aircraft, they all start with an N in the United States, right? The little serial number. Mm-hmm. Military aircraft don't. It's because military aircraft are all registered as experimental aircraft.
Correct.
And so they have their own set of problems on how they're dealing with the cybersecurity
and their own airspace.
And their own airspace in some cases.
Yeah.
And so bringing all this together from a national security standpoint, as well as a safety standpoint, is very concerning to me. We haven't really exposed that because it's a very difficult problem.
Sure.
There's not enough data or analysis in this yet.
Yeah.
We tend to ignore the really expensive, really difficult problems.
Well, and it is, as opposed to maybe ignoring, it's just so mind-numbing that
we don't know how to attack it.
Folks just don't want to go there. And I want to explore that a little bit more. But let's take a brief moment and head out and hear what our sponsors have to say.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
And we're back to New Cyber Frontier with our special guest, Mr. Ed Rios. I'm Abe Thompson, podcasting here from the SecureSet campus in Colorado Springs. So, Ed, you had gotten into this very complex, almost terrifying aviation problem that no one's really been able to kind of unpack, and you talk about reliance on these IP points. You've got physical security concerns for each of those, but,
sure.
but more directly, no real ownership globally over this problem.
Yeah, and you know, largely, I'm not asking for more government participation here. We got to figure out how to do this as a community, the ecosystem of cybersecurity within aviation, let's say.
Yeah.
But even that, as it extends to space, let's look at Blue Origin, right? Mm-hmm. We look at Bezos's rocket. I don't know if you've seen the capsule or not. There's no astronaut in there, and there's no cyber guy in there. There's no pilot in there. It's a cone of equipment, cyber equipment. And a bunch of paying passengers around the edge of the capsule where the windows are. Mm-hmm. And they have put in the rigor, of the cybersecurity rigor, to ensure that they have the capability eventually to take passengers to space and bring them back safely, right? That's a drone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, basically.
Essentially, mm-hmm. with people in it.
Sure.
We can't conceive of doing that with aircraft yet. We talk about driverless cars, right?
Yeah, but so we're just going to skip straight to a spaceship.
We're just going to have to get that and skip the airplane part.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. I think commercially, if you don't have a worldwide body of oversight, I think stakeholders, customer support, performance, that drives to excellence.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Does any other sort of larger scale issue really keep you awake at night?
Yeah, I think the other one that's very complex and difficult to address from a cybersecurity standpoint is the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, clearly, there's the Internet of Things that, I have a presentation where I have a huge list, everything from a hairbrush and a toothbrush to a refrigerator and television. A lot of things use Internet of Things devices. There's a lot of push to put these out there in terms of technology without the proper cybersecurity in it. That in itself is a cumbersome problem.
Yeah.
But where it really keeps me up at night is in the medical community.
Yeah.
As we start to look at the potential threat there. Now, I'm not trying to say the sky is falling here. I think the medical community is very vigilant and diligent about what they're trying to do to protect themselves. But the potential is certainly there. And I think that we need some sort of validation program. Maybe some sort of standard program when it comes to Internet of Things devices that have to do with monitoring health and that could potentially affect a casualty or loss of life.
Sure.
It's a vector that could open itself up to terrorism someday. Mm-hmm. It's one that we need to talk about and address publicly and address, I mean, from a cybersecurity standpoint. You know, we in the United States, our way of life now depends on very expedient technology.
Yeah.
We love the convenience of that. We love the ability that brings to us. There are a lot of threats around the world in places that don't have what we have that would like to exploit the vulnerabilities there.
Sure.
And so we as a country, as a community, from a national security standpoint, as well as from the private sector standpoint, need to be cognizant of that. We need to address it publicly and openly, and we need to try to solve that problem.
Well, and it's clear that your point has been proven by multiple issues. You know, ransomware's impact on the National Health Service in the United Kingdom. I mean, the whole thing just shut down as a result. And then I even remember back to the national cyber exercise that you hosted there at CTU, I believe it was, and how impressed I was that one of the most vocal people there was, I think, the director of nursing at one of the local hospitals.
Yes.
And she was articulate, she was aware, she was locked in on this problem. And I've actually seen that play out where I've had folks come in here to SecureSet asking about training and whatnot from a medical background.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily interested in leaving their industry, but bringing a cyber expertise into mm-hmm. their industry. So that's definitely played out. And then I think about, you know, sort of the information assurance piece of telemedicine and whatnot, and the need to have that preserved for those remote places and folks that may not have, like you said, what we have. So what kind of response are you getting to your evangelism on this topic?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Some people want to talk about it. Others, you know, want to not talk about it. I think it's something that's you're going to start seeing on stage more and more often as we start, you know, recognizing that this is a challenge for us. But the positive side of this, mm-hmm. and this is sort of, you know, the business aspect of it as a guy that owns CSOC, sure. Is to find innovative ways to mitigate the threat.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of opportunities out there and plenty of technologies. And as, you know, your students graduate and other brilliant young folks come out and think of new ways of attacking these challenges, we're gonna see new spin-ups, new companies start. We're gonna see companies transition and how they can offer services that are secure or capabilities that are secure, whether it's space related or aircraft related or IoT related. I think that it's a ton of opportunity that we're seeing in front of us as well as the problem. That's going to be a large part of the solution.
Excellent. And I think we're in a place to do that. Now, let's get regionally biased here. We really think highly of our place here in Colorado Springs mm-hmm. in that whole solution mix.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we need to do with what we have going on now in the Springs to remain and be a viable player on the international stage with regard to cybersecurity?
You know, you spoke of the what I call the cyber corridor here, Denver, yeah. Boulder area. You know, clearly we're growing here, and I think that we need to embrace that, mm-hmm. Both domestically and internationally. Part of doing that is to not look the same. There's 16 NCC-like organizations attached to various state governments or universities around the mm-hmm. United States.
Yeah.
We cannot be them.
Sure.
We need to be more than that.
Absolutely.
And there's a ton of interest. I mean, we've seen many delegations from overseas come and participate with the NCC and the city.
Yeah.
The potential is certainly here. You know, we're Olympic City, USA. We should be on par as Cyber City USA.
You're here.
I'm 100% behind that. But we need to embrace ways to incentivize and bring those companies here.
Sure.
Incentivize and create the venture capital opportunities for startups.
Right.
You know, I think that having SecureSet here is certainly a large part of how that happens. We need to build not only the vision for the city in cybersecurity, but the strategy that associates that
sure.
in terms of incentivization. In terms of facilities and capability, and we need to have a no kidding cybersecurity development plan for the technology
sure.
that we can put here. And there's going to be other technology spin-offs from that. I think the biggest thing that Colorado Springs brings is quality of life.
Sure.
Certainly our economy is part of that, right? Yeah. You can have a great opportunity here. We need to do a good job of shopping that out, not in the state of Colorado, but throughout the United States. and overseas. Sure. If anybody has any interest at all of looking at us as a place to bring technology, we ought to put a ton of energy into that exploit it and bring it here.
Absolutely. Well, and I wholeheartedly support that. And I've actually seen it too. Like, you know, that Indian delegation that came to the event that we were a part of. And then
from Japan, we had a delegation.
Yeah.
We've had Brits and Canadians.
And I was here just in my old schoolhouse here, and a group was brought in from senior leadership folks. One was a mayor, one was a senior government official, and another one was a business leader in, I believe it was Serbia or Croatia. Forgive the mistake, but you know, this mayor was locked on to what I was talking about in terms of how we train people in cybersecurity here in the United States through the lens, of course, of SecureSet. So did the government official, and then the fashion, this guy was from the fashion industry, which was strange, but these people, exactly. So Colorado Springs is an interesting place for the world to come and kibbutz, if you will, on this subject matter.
Sure, and we ought to set it up and host it. You know,
yeah.
One of the largest places that pulls in the international community is Estonia, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, Estonia is huge. We should look at the good lessons learned of how places like Dubai and Estonia and Japan, other places where they're trying to be, you know, cybersecurity or cyber proficient and centric.
Sure.
And see what we can learn from that and do it here.
I've been at two different events, I believe, where I bumped into an Estonian. One was a military and then another sort of government official. And you're absolutely right. They've made their place on the map for sure. And so this has been a banner year for you. How do we make this a banner year for the cybersecurity industry in general?
Well, certainly we can't rest on our laurels. You know, there's three characteristics in cyber. And we have to keep these in mind for cybersecurity as well as anything that's IT related, cyber related, whatever.
Right.
The first one is that cyber is generational.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. What you and I know as cyber and how we use it is completely different than an 8-year-old who is learning coding concepts with toys that are sold by Toys R Us.
Yep.
And certainly, you know, from our parents and grandparents, you know, who still maybe do use a flip phone in some cases or have
If that,
right? So it's generational. And so as we approach it from a business sense, we need to understand that that is a characteristic of cyber and embrace that. And it doesn't change, right? Mm-hmm. It keeps on, I mean, it constantly changes. It doesn't, that concept, the characteristic doesn't go away. The second one is that it's very cultural.
Yeah.
The way we as Americans embrace cyber and the way we're limited with cyber is something that we have to take in consideration. You know, it's interesting, culturally, our laws restrict us and protect us in terms of privacy. What's fascinating to me about that is it's so ironic that we protect ourselves from our privacy, but the internet is open to the whole wide world. So as we're trying to protect ourselves from our own companies or our own government, the rest of the governments and the rest of the businesses around the world are looking straight at us.
Right, and as we understand, Europe is almost the flip. I mean, it's all about the individual protection of data.
Absolutely.
And it's just so funny because that seems such an American mindset, you know, sort of that, hey, this is my data, get your hands off my guns, those kind of things.
Right.
And yet we're kind of backwards.
So that second characteristic of culture has to be part of any business approach we take in cybersecurity or IT or anything.
Sure.
Policy, all of it. And the third one is, as you know, it's constantly changing.
Yeah,
that's the third and final characteristic, I think, of cyber and cybersecurity. The technology is changing, how we use it is changing, the ideas are changing. The number one technology asset in cyber is right here.
Yeah,
whoever comes up with an idea of how to use it, how to employ it, how to exploit it, whether it's criminal or for goodness,
right?
Those are the folks that are going to make a difference. And so those three characteristics, I think, generational, cultural, and constant change, are what we have to keep in mind as we move forward.
Well, and you think about the true origins of our generation, our industry, Sun Tzu, right?
Right.
At least his principles of information operations are still remain. So there's that constancy. But you're absolutely right. The rules change every time you turn around.
Yeah, they really do. And you know, we embrace Moore's Law.
Yeah.
I think we've exceeded that.
Oh yeah, without question. Well, Ed, of course, it's a ridiculous pleasure every time I get to hang out with you.
Thanks, Ed. It's great.
We share a similar heritage and in our military background, and you're one of those Air Force guys a Navy guy can learn to like.
And but, vice versa. I love my Navy brothers.
Indeed. And I just, you know, I want to say thank you for your leadership in this industry and here in the community and for everything you've done for us and looking after folks. And I definitely wish you the greatest success as things unfold for you and your private endeavors now that you've moved in there more fluidly. So, again, just thank you and thanks for being on the broadcast. This is Abe Thompson podcasting from the campus of SecureSet here in Colorado Springs, a guest for Mr. Chris Gorog here on the new Cyber Frontier, and it's been my delight to have Colonel Ed Rios with us.
Yeah, and if you need to get hold of me, my email is ed.rios@cyberspaceops.com.
ed.rios@cyberspaceops.com. Take care.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.